Okay, everyone, welcome to the CHAV Phone Bridge Workshop, Living Life on Life's Terms. This workshop is being recorded. Anything which does not meet the World Service Organization standards for workshops will be edited and deleted. My name is Cheryl. I'm Grateful Compulsive Eater and your moderator for this workshop. I have mass muted the conference line and request that you stay muted until our question and answer session, which will take place after our panelists are done. You may then unmute yourself by hitting the star and six keys on your phone pad when you are ready to speak. We will also have some time for callers to share. To open, would you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept
the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the things that I can. Thy will, not mine, be done. Amen.
Please remute yourselves, everyone, by hitting the star six key so we may continue. Okay, Judy W. will be our spiritual timekeeper. Thank you, Judy. Each panelist will share their experience, strength, and hope for 15 to 20 minutes. We do have six panelists set up, and I'll give you your name, their names in just a moment. Okay, let's get started. We welcome everyone that joined us on the phone bridge today. Before we begin, we ask that if you are an available sponsor or need a sponsor, please stay after the workshop to give us your name and phone number or get a number. You can email me, Cheryl, at phonebridgesponsorcoordinator@gmail.com, or you can call at 718-438-6790 Eastern Time. I'd like to thank our wonderful panelists who agreed to take part in this great workshop by doing service and giving us their experience, strength, and hope. The panelists in order are Jan D., Judy G., Suzanne, Joe, Roberta, and Marsha. And again, Judy has kindly volunteered to be our spiritual timekeeper. Thank you, Judy. Jan, let's begin with Jan. Jan, would you please start us off and let us hear your share? Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Cheryl. I'm just very, very blessed to be here this morning to be part of this workshop. I say this morning because it's morning where I am, but happy afternoon for everybody else. Okay, we're talking today about living life on life's terms, and I'm going to qualify a little bit as I get started. I've been in program over 11 and a half years. I've been abstinent through the grace of God, and it's only because I've been taught how to live life on life's terms. I'm maintaining an 82-pound weight release. Currently that's in flux due to some health issues. And I am a full-service sponsor, not currently available, but always available for outreach and, you know, just anything anybody needs. You know, I'm just so grateful that I can be there. And grateful that everyone is there for me. My topic today is medical abstinence, and this for me has been a critical part of my program and my abstinence and my health. I was quite fortunate a few years ago to be part of the World Service Business Conference when we revised the wording in Forever Abstinent regarding medical abstinence. And we had gone over it during that business conference and made the adjustments that we felt were necessary. And I am going to go over that momentarily. But I'd like to preface it with just a short comment that this is worded the way it is because some folks, myself included, have medical needs. And if I could not comply with my doctor's wishes, then I would not be able to do this program. I wouldn't be blessed with that recovery. And that's what it takes into account. Now, some there are other opinions out there, and that's it. We take what we like and leave the rest. So, you know, my opinion, and that's all I can share with you, is that there are times when medical abstinence is a necessity. And there are other times when perhaps it's not, but that's not me to judge. I can only judge what I feel comfortable in sponsoring, in doing, and, you know, just taking it one day at a time. Okay, what the Forever Abstinent book says on page 7, it says, the See How Food Plan's effectiveness has led to its adaptation in various treatment centers and hospital units. Also, many physicians have found that the plan is adaptable to programs for any of a series of maladies such as diabetes, obesity, and related problems. The See How position is that the food plan is medically adaptable. Most treatment units and some physicians prescribe what is often called metabolic adjustment, which adds an additional fruit and 1/2 protein around 9 p.m. Since this is contrary to the basic 3-0-1, three meals each day, no eating between meals, and one day at a time, See How Food Plan individuals sponsored in this way need the physician's note and a medical sponsor. The medical is also in quotes, meaning someone who understands what medical abstinence is, someone who is doing the program. Deviations from the food plan beyond this are rarely sponsorable in the See How context, since eating more meals reinforces compulsive eating and addition of sugar or flour is contrary to the See How concept. And that's basically it. It sounds like just a lot of words, but, you know, to each thing taken separately makes so much sense. And just below that, on that page, there is the doctor's modifications spelled out. The doctor has to indicate what the modifications are and sign it and date it. I've been on medical abstinence for I'll just go ahead and share what my primary issue was, is low blood sugar. The only way to control that was to modify my program. I had started, when I first started in abstinence, I was doing three meals a day with nothing in between, and I was having difficulty. I was getting having symptoms of a low blood sugar in between meals, and so I did work with my physician, and we, you know, I tested myself, and we documented everything, and he gave me, you know, he said, okay, you have this diagnosis, and this is what you're going to have to do. And what we did was separated two of my meals into what I do in essence is I have taken the basic food plan of three meals a day and divided it equally into five meals. And I have a time frame that I have to eat every 3 hours. And this sounds, oh, wow, you know, in the beginning it was like, wow, I can just constantly eat. No, I can't. It sounds funny, but sometimes this is a real nuisance. I wish I could just eat three times a day, because having to have extra, you know, I have to go prepared everywhere I go. Otherwise, I'm going to pass out on you. I'm sorry. But that's the way my medical abstinence runs. I've got several other issues that also fit into this, and because of that, I have to make sure that I maintain, but it's the same kind of abstinence. My food plan follows exactly all the amounts that are on the Forever Abstinent food plan for my weight, all of the guidelines that are there, you know, what we normally eat for breakfast, that's what I eat for breakfast, you know, that I just divide two meals into half, and that's the way it works. And for me, it works because I stay healthy. I don't have to take any medications to control this issue. I don't have to do other things. I don't have to leave food out. I don't have to add anything that is not on the written food plan. I just adjust the times, and this is with my doctor's approval and guidance. Every time I change a doctor, I take my food plan, I take my menu that I normally eat, and I show it to the doctor. I take a brochure from See How, I explain the program, and I say, is this acceptable with you? And every doctor that I've taken this to, in fact, I go to a new doctor tomorrow, and I'm going to take the food plan and my menus and say, what's your opinion on this? And I can guarantee he's going to say, wonderful, except that he's a surgeon and he does weight loss surgeries. And I'm kind of, I find it amusing because I'm going to go in there and say, look at me, I don't need you, except for other things. So anyhow, the reason I'm even mentioning, some of you may know, and I'm just so grateful for all the prayers and everything that I just recently was discharged from the hospital for one of my issues. So, and I'm healthy and I'm grateful. Okay, and while I was in the hospital, I'd like to share this. I was able to stay abstinent totally. Part of it was because of the treatment that I was receiving from the physician, but when I was not permitted to eat for quite a number of days, but they took care of my physical needs in spite of that. But when I was allowed to start on back on actual food, I worked again, I kept in touch with my sponsor, and she just was so encouraging and so loving. But when I was ready to start back on food, I committed what I would be having, even though it was not, it was under the doctor's direction. And so I did exactly what the doctor said, but I did commit it to my sponsor, and I reported every day. This is what I did also, the next day I would tell her. And it's remarkable. And I was able to progress. I am home now. I am back to my normal medical abstinent food plan. I am back on the road to recovery health-wise. And I am still in recovery for compulsive eating. And for this, I am so, so grateful. Many folks, I've had sponsees in the past who have asked me to sponsor them for medical reasons. And each time that I find something totally different, they present me with their food plan, so to speak. And it's so different from what Forever Abstinence says is our food plan that, I take a chance and, I take time to really get to know what they're talking about, what's working for them. And more often than not, I have to release them as a sponsee because, as it says, deviations from the food plan beyond the regular what's written for us is not sponsorable. I could not in good conscience sponsor these people and be able to say, oh, you're doing See How, the food plan, just as it's written, and they're not. And, I feel badly, and sometimes it works out for the best because there have been instances where maybe that was a wake-up call. It was a learning experience for me and maybe a wake-up call for them to stop and say, okay, why didn't this work here? Maybe I need to look at something else. And, through the grace of their higher power, they found what works for them within the parameters of our food plan. And I just wanted to just add here that when I sponsor someone who is on medical abstinence, and when I look at my own medical abstinence, I know that I'm only a guide for others, and that I have to remember that my food plan has to be followed exactly. I have a very loving sponsor who's not on medical abstinence, but she accepts my medical abstinence because it's within the parameters and it's what my physician has prescribed. But she is, I'm so grateful because when I'm, you know, actually feeling good and I'm like, gee, this would really be nice, she reminds me, you know, she reminds me to remember to keep things in focus, to keep things right on the, make sure that they follow the food plan exactly, not to let my obsession of the mind get taken away, you know, take me away. You know, it's so easy for me. Oh, I was the model manipulator when it came to trying to make things work or making people do what I wanted. And sometimes that old obsession just, my disease is just laying in wait and it wants to step right in. And just the slightest thing could potentially take me off track. For that reason, even if I weren't on medical abstinence, I would report every change that I make. If there's a change in timing for some reason that something is going on or whatever, or I have to change a food, so that my my obsession of the mind doesn't try to take control of my food plan. I mean, there's a lot of potential here for my food plan to change things around. And I cannot let that happen. And my sponsor is just there for me always. And she reminds me, you know, what is it that makes you want to do that? You know, why do you want to do that? And I'm just like, because I have an obsession of the mind. And I'm just so grateful that I have this awesome food plan. I can talk to others. I talk to my sponsor every day. I commit my food every day. And for that reason, I stay as well as I can. Some of us are just not as young as others. Thank you, Judy. Some of us are just a little bit older. Some of us have undergone major life changes physically. But each one of us, you know, working together with our sponsor, working together with our physicians, working with all the other folks in the program, in the fellowship, we have a chance to get it right. My higher power is just right there in the foreground. If I didn't have a higher power, I couldn't do this program. And if I didn't have abstinence, I'd have never found my higher power. It's just, it's the most miraculous thing. You know, they say, don't leave until the miracle happens. Well, once the miracle happens, I'm going to stay around for another miracle because I'm getting them all the time. I just had a miracle happen this past week, and I am so grateful. And I'm just, you know, sticking around because if things start happening, I'm just going to wait for another miracle because I know my higher power is there and he's going to make it happen for me. And this is the way that I live life on life's terms. You know, I can't control what kind of health issues life is going to hand me. And but I can work with my program, work with my higher power, work with my sponsor, work with my medical care providers, and I am living life on life's terms. I want to thank you all for allowing me to share today, and I wish you all good health, recovery, and a blessed, blessed day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jen. Appreciate it. That was beautiful. Okay, Judy G., would you like to continue now?
Sure, no problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daryl. I'm Judy G., compulsive eater. I'm from Connecticut. Right now I'm in Texas with my daughter. And I will qualify a little bit. I've been in C House since November 30th of 2013. I've had abstinence since then because I was given the gift of desperation when I first came into these rooms, and my higher power has been with me since then. I've released 135 pounds. I am back in a normal sized body, and I cannot tell you how grateful I am for that. When I look back at pictures over the years, I can't find anything where I was in a normal body since the 80s, I think. So anyway, that's been a blessing of this program, one of the blessings. And I'm going to talk about abstinence, living life on life's terms with adversity. I do believe that there were many adverse things in my life before I came into the program. However, since I had a compulsive nature, I would practice something that would numb me before I would get to the true feelings that I was having about them. Also some of these adversities were of my own making in addition to other things that were happening. But since I came to see how, I've had to feel fully all the adversity and knowing that I have no control over anything and that my higher power has it all. He's working in my life daily. I see it on a daily basis, and I couldn't see it if I wasn't abstinent. And I believe that to be true. I am grateful when I see what he does. It's just amazing. That is one of the miracles, I believe, of this program. Anyway, getting back to adversity, I started in November 2013, and a year ago, tomorrow, May 23rd, my mother had a stroke, and all that goes with that, personality change, a little bit of physical effects from it, where she couldn't speak very well for a while, but it's been a year, and she's getting along pretty well. What happened also was 2 months after that, my father fell in the yard, and they're both in their 90s. So what resulted from that was in and out of rehabs, hospitals, urinary tract infections, Foley bags, all kinds of maladies. It has been a year of turmoil is about the only thing I can say. Now, what this did to the family was hard to explain. I'm the oldest of 5 children. I never did get along with my mother that well. She and I pretty much butt heads all my life. But I came back. I lived in Texas for over 30 years, went back to Connecticut before all this happened with the idea that I would repair that relationship with my mother. And I thought that it was going along that path because we would play skippo, we'd have little fun times and take them out and, you know, just have pleasantries, and it was nice. But then when the stroke happened, well, her personality changed, and what I saw was the mother of my childhood. And I thought, oh my God, I cannot believe this is happening. She was very combative, accusatory, abusive is about the only word I could say, because it was a lot of yelling, throwing of the walker, I'm going to commit suicide, you know, this is, I'm not accepting this. And I could not do enough, nor could I do anything right. And I live right around the corner. I am now retired. I was working at the time, but I've since retired, and my other siblings all work. There's 3 others in Connecticut and 1 in Florida. And they've kind of appointed me the person to handle a lot of the things. I did a lot of paperwork for them. I got them, my father, Medicaid, 24/7 in-home care. Finally, we've got that covered. I went through all their paperwork. I handle all their finances, take them to doctor appointments, take them to get their haircuts, do errands. Pretty much my life right now is intertwined with my two elderly parents. And it's very stressful. I have a lot of resentment will come up, but I'll tell you what, if I didn't have this program and the specific guidelines every day that I do, every day I get up, I do my reading, I do my writing, I do my question, I call my sponsor, I have my sponsee time, I have my contact with my higher power time, because when I first came in, I was on the fence. I grew up in a very strict religious household, but because of my mother's anger and personality, I thought, I don't want any of this if this is what religion is all about. So I went away from it in my life. But coming back to see how I did get forgiveness, I felt, from a higher power early on in the program for something that I didn't even know I was feeling guilty about. But with the help of my first sponsor, I got through that, and I will be forever grateful, because that was the opening to actually seeking out a higher power to incorporate that in my life rather than my own self-will. So, anyway, I am now on a path of more spiritual growth. I'm seeking out, I listen to tapes, I listen to all kinds of things that are spiritual, and trying to see how my personality can change to be more forgiving, more of service, and yet still live a happy and joyous and free life. And all of that comes from being in Seahaw, all of it. It started here, and I'm growing here. And right now, I've been doing service, what I consider service for the family. I believe it was God's will, because I tried getting out of this early on. I've been planning my escape, and there were no opportunities, none. I would petition my siblings and say, I was on the couch in the fetal position from the emotional rantings of my mother, and I thought, I don't know if I can do this. And so I, sent out a letter to my siblings saying, this is not workable. I can do this other thing, but I can't have a daily contact with her. Well, that was met with crickets. There was no reply, nothing. So I thought, okay, this has got to be God's will, because it's certainly not mine by any sense of the word. So I surrendered, and I decided that I would just do the next right thing, which led me to run their finances and do all the, even for the VA, which I don't even want to get into that because that's always a problem, but to have sanity and peace and gratefulness and thankfulness through all of this is part of the program. I mean, it's part of Seahaw. And being in touch with my higher power and knowing that I am doing his will is really quite a gift in itself. I haven't had to eat over anything, nor have I had any desire to, because I know if I do, I'm going to give all of this up. I'm going to give all of my peace of mind up, all of my emotional growth, my spiritual growth, because I believe that's what I've gotten the most out of this. I never really focused on the weight because I knew it was going to take care of itself. Years ago, I was in HOW OA and went away for 20 years without any 12-step work. So I knew the weight would come off, but I needed a lot of help in other areas. So, I am so grateful for that. Anyway, Right now I'm in Texas with my daughter. Here's some more adversity. Her marriage, her 11-year marriage is falling apart, and he has moved out. So I'm here to help try to help her, support her through this. Unfortunately, there is alcohol involved in this, and she is now in another 12-step program to help with his issue. He won't at this
point.
5 minutes. Thank you. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But again, I can only bring my 12-step program and my experience, strength, and hope, because I've gone through this myself. Her father was the same way. You know, compulsions are compulsions. I've got alcoholics, overeaters, all kinds of spending, you name it. It's all in the family. It's all in the genes, and it's something that I have within myself. So the only way out is 12-step, as far as I'm concerned. That is it. I've tried everything else for the food. I've done every diet known to man. And frankly, I don't have the rest of my life to fool around with it anymore. I just feel like this works. Why fix something that ain't broke? And I'm just going to go with it for the rest of my life. And trust that God has got the, he's over everything in my life. All the people, all the circumstances. It's all going to work out for my best interest. What may be horrible right now is going to, you know, down the road, I'm going to look back and say, okay, that happened for that reason, and look where we are today. Because I already feel like I'm already on the other side, even though I'm still going through. I have learned so much about myself and been able to put some boundaries up. Again, some are met with crickets, but others do work. So I feel like God is kind of sifting through what's going to help what's going to help the whole and what's going to help me. So I feel surrendered today. I feel grateful. I feel thankful for everybody in this program, because I've gotten such support with my outreach calls and sponsor, and I guess that's about time. Anyway, thank you for letting me share my story, and I will pass.
Thank you, Judy. That was so beautiful. Okay, so let's go ahead with Suzanne. Suzanne, are you available there?
Yes, I am. I am ready.
Good. Thank you, Suzanne. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And I know Judy will give me a 5-minute warning. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Cheryl, for putting this together. My name is Suzanne, and I am a grateful compulsive eater and living my life one day at a time. To qualify, I came into these rooms of CA Hell April 6, 2003. I did have the gift of desperation. I had been in another program previously a few years earlier someplace else, so I knew what I needed to do. So, let's see, I have lost 66 pounds. I'm a Food Inventory Step sponsor. And like everyone else here and everyone else in program, you know, life happens, and not everything in life is good. You know, there are bumps in the road, and some of the bumps are bigger than others. So I've had to live life on life's terms. I've really learned how to do that in this program. But today I wanted to speak more on getting through surgery and working my program in life, but also grief, because they sort of happened at the same time for me. I was caring for my mother, which I did for many years, and during her last illness, I was very grateful to have the Foam Bridge meetings, because the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks of her life, she was in a hospital maybe two blocks from where I lived, so sometimes I slept in the hospital and sometimes I didn't. But the nights that I slept in the hospital, I would get up at 4 in the morning, and I think it was 4 in the morning, and do a meeting Pacific time. And that really, really set the tone for the day. It got me through. It reminded me who I was and where I was going, and it just set the tone for the day. And I was fortunate enough that when my mom passed, two things. When my mom became ill with this last illness, Our cardiologist was very well of the fact, very well aware of the fact that I was in 12-step program and applauded it, supported it. And he told me at the beginning of this last illness, he said, I am so happy. He can make anything sound happy, even in the worst things, which is good for me. He said, I'm so happy you have a community. You have a community. Whatever happens here, you're going to need that community more than ever. And so on the last day of my mom's life, I was not alone on that last journey with my mom. My very best friend in program, whom I love as a sister, was there holding my hand as well. And he was there too, my cardiologist. Not the moment she passed, but shortly before. And so, you know, and he reminded me, remember what I said, you're really going to need your community. Your mom would want you to continue with that. And I'm very pleased that you have that. So during that time, even that day, you know, I took my sponsee phone calls. I called my sponsor. Well, I need to back up a little bit. My sponsor, up until a couple days before my mom had passed away, had been out of the country, and I had been talking to someone else. But because I had that community, I didn't feel a vacuum. While I needed her and missed her, I had other people that were there for me. So the day that she passed, I was able to speak to her. She was able to give me guidance and direction. And I spoke to all my sponsees. I was kind of in shock, going through the motions. But I did everything that I needed to do. Was my program perfect that day? No, it was not, because I left the house and I didn't have breakfast. And that was kind of a joke, too. But I got through it, and I ate my appropriate meals. They weren't quite at the time they should have been, but I did eat my meals. And, in fact, I was thinking of not eating my dinner, and a friend of mine who had been in a program called me, and she said, you have to eat. You're in a program. I'm like, oh, yeah. I was in shock. So God took care of me when I couldn't take care of myself. And then the grief, right? I had to grieve because the death of my mom really put into question my living situation. I didn't think I was going to be able to afford to stay where I was, and I had no idea where I was going to live. And this all and I had lived all my life with my mother, and before my mother, my father and mother. So this was like a very new thing for me. I had never lived by myself. I had no idea where I was going to live. I didn't know there was going to be enough money to live there. And yet, somehow, the fear and night terrors that I used to have about this subject were gone because I had worked in program long enough, I guess, that I was in a much, much better place. And when it really happened, I wasn't just terrorized by it because that's how I had felt in the past. And somehow, things worked out where I was able to stay where I lived another 4 or 5 years. I have no idea how that happened, except I owe it to my higher power and along with a few other things that happened. So I was grieving and still working my program, trying to figure things out, and sometimes I would hide under the covers, but I thought, well, at least I'm not eating and I'm not getting into obsessive negative thinking or behavior. And one of those days when I was hiding under the covers, I got the phone call from my doctor that a surgery that I had been waiting for approval for like 2 years finally was approved. This was 2 months after, actually like a month and a half after my mom passed. And my first thought was, I can't do that. And then I thought, oh, no, I have to. I've been waiting for 2 years. And I said, when? And they said, around July 20-something. That was right when the convention was going to start. And I thought, well, I have to do the surgery. So I did the surgery, but I planned for it. You know, I did. My doctor knew of the program, and I told him about my abstinence. I met with a nutritionist. I met with a surgeon. And my doctor and the surgeon told me that I would not be able to eat solid food for about a month, and I have to be on liquid. There'd be no way that I'd be able to chew anything. If I did, I would choke, and B, I wouldn't be able to digest it, and I would be very painful, and blah, 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 blah. So I went over to the nutritionist. I spoke to the nutritionist at the hospital, told her what I needed with a simple explanation, that I'm in a 12-step program, but B, I'm allergic to sugar and flour. And so she worked it out with me when I was in the hospital. I was in the hospital 2.5 days, that I got a liquid diet that was abstinent. The other thing that he told me was, for a couple of months, my protein levels had to be much higher in order for me to heal. And I, a good compulsive eater than I am, wanted to argue with him. And my sponsor said, you have to take the doctor's guide and stop arguing. You're not the doctor. I'm like, yes, ma'am. So that's what happened in my case, and it was a liquid diet. I got to tell you, when I could eat the other stuff, I was so happy. But, you know, I did it. And so during this time, I was grieving and healing and in pain. And in my case, for me, it worked out better that I still had my sponsees call. I gave them that option. I said, I will be under some heavy-duty medication for the first couple of days. So if you need to call somebody else, you know, please take care of yourself. Like, no, we want to talk to you. For me, it was a big help because I was in so much pain. It was a distraction. I had to focus so hard on what they were saying that I got out of myself. And I was in a tremendous amount of pain because when I was had surgery, they pinned my arm underneath my body, and that was my broken shoulder that had been broken at birth. So when I woke up, I said to the doctor, are you sure you didn't do something to my shoulder instead of the other place? And he said, you had something wrong with your shoulder. I'm like, didn't you get the note? But anyway, I couldn't move my right arm. I couldn't lift it. I had to use my other hand to lift my arm. So that was that really bad pain. And so I had to listen very keenly. I had to be very focused. And it really helped me. When my sponsor had her knee surgery, she said, you know what, I'm going to be so medicated. I don't want to, you know, I'll be talking to my sponsor, find someone else to talk to. And I had to respect that. But in my case, it really helped me because knowing me, it would have been easier to get off track. And so as long as my sponsees were fine with that, I think at the time I had 3 sponsees. In fact, one of them came to see me every day in the hospital. And my best friend who was with me when my mom passed away was also there, you know, sharing her stuff. And I'm part of me, I was in so much pain. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I'm listening, and it made me forget the pain I was in. And I also had to deal, while I was in that pain, I was really going through a lot of grief still with my mom. The night before my surgery, I got into a little bit of fear, and I had someone come over, and I wrote out my will. I thought, you know, you never know, and there are a few loose ends here. I better have some clarity, and I did that. And so the morning of my surgery, I had a little fear. I had that moment. But I said my prayers, and a calmness came over me. But I also felt a tremendous amount of sadness. I wish my mom had been there. But I know it's funny because after my surgery, the surgeon came in, and he said, your mom was there. I don't know why he said that because he didn't know her, but he said, your mom was there. I'm like, whether he remembers saying that or not, or maybe I was delusional and having hallucinations, it gave me comfort because I really wanted my mom there. I didn't have any relatives, and yet, I had the people that I really did need. And I had to make a decision after my surgery. I needed to be cared for because I was in no way I couldn't care for myself. And I let someone take me home with them and care for me for 2 months. And I never, 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 ever would have allowed that. I couldn't accept that if I were not in this program. And my sponsor said to me, you've taken care of everyone else your whole life. Why don't you let her take you home and care for you? It's okay. And I did. And I needed that. And it was time to heal. And I was able to have my own room and my friend's home, my own telephone. I was still able to do my program and do everything I needed to do and my physical therapy. And it was and my medical abstinence and then my regular abstinence. When the time came, I was able to do it. But I couldn't have done it by myself. And if it weren't for my program, I don't know if I have to reflect the gifts this program has given me. Many, many, many gifts. And I would not have been able to have made that decision. Just knowing how I was before, I probably would have told the doctor, forget the surgery, and I wouldn't have gone through with it. Because I would have gone through, I won't be able to take care of myself, A, B, C, all this, I would have been getting in tomorrow, and you know, I would have been getting into that instead of living today. So what I have learned and what my sponsor has really taught me is, just for today, I will do what I need to do. Just for today, I'll have my program. Just for today, I will be abstinent, and I need to, and yes, I do need to plan for tomorrow and the next day, but I need to stay in the moment. And because I had been in program for a while, it really helped me not get into the fear and not skip ahead to in a month, 3 months, or 4 years from now. I had to live in the moment, and I had to make decisions at that time. And, you know, with the help of my sponsor and some writing, she gave me some writing to do right after my mom died that I didn't really want to do. I thought it was too soon, and I started to get a little resentful, and I thought, wait. My sponsor and I have been together a long time. She knows me. And even if I don't agree with it, I need to take her direction. So I asked her if I could change the wording a little bit, and I explained why. And she said, absolutely, but I still want you to do it. I said, yeah. So I did it. And I saw why she had me do this writing. It was really important. So, you know, I learned I need to take direction. I don't always know what's best for me. Heck, if I did, would I need this program? Oh, no. I'd be sponsoring myself. Oh, I've done that one many years ago. But I don't sponsor myself now. And I have my sponsor and my higher power. And the other thing I wanted to say about my surgery was when I was fighting with the doctor a little bit about the food plan he wanted me to do, the abstinence, my sponsor has reminded me, and as she has every once in a while, the food is not your higher power. And the food plan is not your higher power either. It's a tool. So stop arguing with the doctor and take direction. And so, yeah, you know what? I could so very easily make the food plan my higher power, or the literature my higher power, or whatever. And for me, I need to make my higher power God. For me. Because once I start making the food plan my higher power, I'll distort it and misuse it. And I don't want to do that. Thank you, Judy. So because I was able, I've gotten through many, many things. I've gotten through, let's see, 3 major surgeries, 3 minor surgeries, my mom's illnesses, many illnesses, and I had to make do several times. And I've traveled. I've had to do life on life's terms. And we're fortunate that here on the phone bridge, we have so many people all over the place. So if I need a phone call at 2 in the morning, I can figure out, when I was in the hospital with my mom at 4 or 5 in the morning, I could call people on the East Coast because I needed to do the outreach calls then. And that's a gift, you know. That really is a gift that I can do that. And, like, if I'm up really late at night, if something has happened, I got people someplace else I can call. And I need to make those calls. And so, once again, you know, I am blessed. My doctor has reminded me once again, the last time I saw him, you have a community, and that is your family. And he's right. You guys are my family. Because of this program, I was able to care for my mom and not get too resentful. I was able to make choices. And because of this program, I was also able to leave her in the care of someone else and travel a little bit. Where I don't know if I would have done that before. I was like, no, I have to stay here. I have to be the martyr. And because of this program, I was able to turn over to God and leave her in capable hands of someone else. you know, I had to move, and that was very stressful, and it was an upheaval in my life, but I've learned a lot along the way that changed for me. I don't do well with big changes, good or bad, but here's the good thing, is that once they're made, I don't really look back. I adjust, and I have adjusted, and good things are coming my way. I've learned a lot about myself. I have learned that I can get through anything. I have a very good friend in program who recently has gone to prison. And, you know, people with big diagnoses in their life and have had gone through really, really horrific things, and they come out better people. And I think of them, and I admire them, because I know they're compulsive eaters. They're doing the deal. They're doing what we do here. And if they can get through that, then I can get through anything. And I have gotten through a lot, but many other people have gotten through more. And I'm just a compulsive eater among compulsive eaters working my program. And I really, really have turned it over to God. Every, you know, step three is so important. I when I was first new, yeah, you turn the food over. But the deeper you go, and the more you uncover, discover, and discard, the more I know that I have to turn every bit of my life over the care of God as I understand Him. Every bit of it. No longer do I ask, I want this, I want that. I ask God to show me His will and to show me what I'm to do, the next right thing. And He does, when I let Him. You know, I have to get out of the way. I can be my own worst enemy. I can also be the person that beat myself up more than anyone else. And I think for today, I don't do that anymore. But I'm just so grateful, and thank you for letting me share, and thank you, Cheryl, for moderating.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you so much. And Joe, have you been able to come on?
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for your service, and Judy, for your service. This is Joe, a compulsive eater in Houston. And I'll qualify first. Today is I have 730 days of recommitted abstinence, and I just figured that out. That would be almost 2 years. But since it's leap year, tomorrow will be my two-year anniversary. I'll celebrate it. I'm a food inventory and step sponsor, not currently available, but am available for outreach. What got me to the rooms of recovery until I was about 26 years old, I never had a pinch of fat on me. When I got out of the Army, I was just in perfect shape and always, you know, was in good shape, never had any fat. And then I started eating, and then I'd go on the diet of the week club or the diet of the month club, something like that, as different. I'd gain 15 or 20 pounds, and I'd lose it. Then I went to school and went to college, finished all of that sort of stuff, worked, and what got me into the actual rooms of recovery was I felt betrayed and abandoned by the institution that I love the most, and that's another story. We're not going to get into it today. So all of my I was almost to my goal weight when this happened, and I put back all of my weight plus a lot more and got up to about 315 pounds. I could hardly waddle. I felt miserable. And it was all emotional eating, and that's what my food issue is. It's all emotional eating. If I don't get my way, I eat. If I get bent out of shape, and then I eat over it, and it's totally ridiculous. But that's the insanity of this disease. And I was in about a 12-year state of depression. I went to counseling. I talked to people I trusted, and I worked at it, a lot of recovery work, but not in the rooms of recovery. I'd never been in any 12-step program before I came into this one. And so after about 12 years of going through all this confusion and down in the dumps and feeling miserable and carrying that darn 315 pounds, I stopped by the retreat center, which is close to my house. I passed by it two or three times a day and asked if they had any programs for people that that ate too much, and they said, yes, we have a meeting here on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and this was on a Wednesday, so I went back the next day to the meeting, and then the people there told me there would be a workshop the following Saturday. I went to that, and a lady put a gentleman in front of me and said, this is going to be your sponsor, and so I got abstinent at midnight the next day and stayed abstinent for a good nine months, and it was like blue cloud, pink cloud, whatever you type have abstinence. It was good, clean, clear abstinence. Then I started slipping and sliding. I couldn't get my abstinence back, but I never left the rooms of recovery. I never left the program. And then finally I was able to get it back, and I had about a year and a half of alleged abstinence. I'm going to say that. It was good, clean abstinence the first year or so, but then I started pushing the envelope, and I would push it and push it, and then after a while, bottom line, I started deceiving myself and fooling myself. I was lying. I was, and I believed the lie after a while. So I would call my sponsor every day, and I would commit my food and stuff, but then I would, make a certain food item a fruit when it wasn't a fruit, make another certain item something else when it wasn't a vegetable. But I was doing the program, and I was believing it myself, but I never left the rooms. I went to the meetings, and I listened to people, but I wasn't. It ended up, but then the weight started coming back, too, and my mental fog, which is the worst thing. The weight's bad, but the mental fog is bad. So I finally came to my senses, and only by my higher power, I don't know, it was just a miracle. I owned up to my sponsor and started over again. And I was giving some service at that time, but not as much as I probably should have been. But anyhow, by coming clean and starting over, it took about 5 or 6 days for the food fog to leave my head as usual. And then I started getting back, feeling decent and being able to do things. And then, of course, then my weight came off. Of course, this isn't as we all know, this isn't a weight loss program. This is a spiritual program of recovery. What I found out is I had studied, spirituality and theology and philosophy and all that sort of stuff, and I knew it well, and I've always gone to church since I was born, and always been believed in God. But what I found out is that I really was a religious person. I wasn't a religious fanatic, but I thought I was a spiritual person, but I was spiritually bankrupt. And this program is a spiritual, 12-step spiritual program of recovery. And by hearing different people's stories, in my group that I went to, my face-to-face meeting, there was one psychiatrist and a couple of psychologists, a couple of attorneys, and a couple of doctors and other kinds of folks there, all different kinds. There was probably about 25 people in the rooms, and they had all, most of them had kicked their gambling, their drugs, their sex, their alcohol, or whatever it might be, and came to find out that their core addiction was food. So I went, wow, I could have qualified for some of those other programs, but today I don't act out in anything except this food, so I'm sure glad I found this first. So I have been in the program for about 11 years now, and every day it the miracles continue to come true, but it's only because I believe is that I give service and I'm able to. The service does far more for me than it does for anybody else, and it helps keep me abstinent. When I get into myself and get back into my control issues and my manipulating and all that sort of stuff, I'm my own worst enemy. And so that lie that I was, I've done it in other things too. I believe when you do something that's not appropriate for a while, then for me anyway, I start believing that it's okay. So I really didn't think that I was not being abstinent, and that was just, that was bad. I mean, I don't want to say bad. That was what happened. I'm just living life on life's terms. So when I came to my senses and got back abstinent again, I slipped and slided for a little while longer. Still couldn't get a month, but then finally I did. And then today, like I said, I'm happy to say that I have 730 days. Let's see. But the key thing that I wanted to say before is that I think I already said it. I never left the rooms of recovery, and I feel so much better today because I can, talk to people on outreach calls, and I co-lead a couple of meetings, and I can do things to help help other people, and to help, you know, just live life on life's terms, because life's going to happen no matter what. And, if you know, I still have challenges and problems today, like everybody else does, but I don't let them get me down. I don't hold any resentments. I got rid of those things. I didn't really realize they were resentments. I knew intellectually what they were, but I didn't know that I was really all that upset or resentful at the challenges that I had with the institution that I love the most, which is what I blamed for getting me into the depression that I was in. But it was just a fact. That's what happened. The good news is that I've been able to let that go, and once I did, and I was able to let it go within 3 days, and that's a miracle. And this is all before I came to the program, but I still had lots of challenges and issues, and the program teaches me daily things to do. And the only other way, besides giving service, the most important thing is to work the 7 tools and 12 steps every day, no exceptions, whether I feel like it or not. And so it's I have to suit up and show. I choose to suit up and show up every day, because that's where I can find peace of mind, and I can slowly but surely be the person that God created me to be. And I don't have to be into myself. And this is a we program, not a me program. And I thought I was the center of the universe for many years. I helped a lot of people, but I really and truly, if I think about it, maybe I was manipulating the people, controlling them, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not what I want to do today. I like to get things done. And I don't like to be lackadaisical, and I get agitated when people don't, quote-unquote, fall in line. But I'm very careful to not hurt other people's feelings, and to let people be, and to let me be, and to live in the present moment. For too much of my life, I lived in the past, or I lived in the future, and I missed the only thing that I have, and that we all have, and that's today, the present moment. And so I'm granted a daily reprieve from my dis-ease of compulsive eating, which is, it's a threefold disease, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And the physical part is, you know, that's an important part, like I said before. The emotional, I've been there and done that and got that T-shirt and cap, and that was no fun at all. And I really empathize with people that are going through that today, because there, a lot of people have a lot of issues, and I still have my issues. But the program, by keeping it a front burner issue and working those 7 tools and 12 steps of recovery every day, I've got a chance at a daily reprieve, and that's pretty darn exciting. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And for the people that are on this workshop today, and the people that are on the different phone bridge meetings, it's so wonderful to hear people share their experience, strength, and hope. And I always encourage people to, you know, to share something, because if I can get one little nugget out of what someone says, that helps me in my recovery. And I hope that something that I say might help someone else. We're all here to help each other. We're individuals, but we're here together. We're a team. We're a family. And I feel closer to the people on the lines, most of them I've never met, than I do to my own family, which I love my own family. So living life on life's terms is what this workshop is about today, and that's what I'm called to do, and we're all called to do. And one of my favorite sayings, a motivational speaker that I like says, if a wave isn't hitting you now, one's on its way. So as soon as I think everything's all right, well, boom, something else happens. But I'm able to deal with it today because I don't have that food fog, that mental clutter, and I'm able to deal with it on life's terms, and to, you know, all our little sayings, let go and let God, take the next right step, whatever it might be. They sound like little trite sayings, but they're all powerful and true for me. And I want to conclude by, because what I do now, as I said a little while ago, I don't live in the past anymore, and I don't live in the future anymore. I live in the present moment. Because I'm human, do I still tend to kind of go in that direction? Yes, but I remember my favorite little saying, and I'm going to conclude with this, my little saying, you know, God created the present. It's his gift to us. And so I'm just excited to be able to live in the present moment. And when I do that, my life runs a lot better.
2 minutes.
Thank you. I heard that. And with that, I will close, and I appreciate everybody being here. And thanks again, Cheryl and Judy, for your service. And I pass.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much. I did forget to ask everyone if they'd like to leave their number. So if you'd like to do that, Joe, we can start.
Sure, absolutely. My number is 713-952-3043, 713-952-3043 Central Time. And you can call anytime the phone is off when it needs to be. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. Okay, after Joe, we've got Roberta. Roberta, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you so much. My name is Roberta. I'm a compulsive eater from Orange County, California. My date of abstinence is January 31st, 2007. I'm maintaining about a 60-pound weight loss. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. Not available, but always available for outreach, and I'll leave my number at the end. This topic of living life on life's terms, I thought, was such a great topic. And to kind of go into that, I want to share that this last December, I think it was like, I don't know, New Year's Eve or the day before New Year's Eve, I got a call from somebody who I didn't know, but they said, hey, are you the Roberta that I hear on the See How website? And I said, maybe. And they said, you know, he was a radio interviewer that does a podcast, and he wanted to interview me to talk about my program. And I said, okay, so long as we can maintain personal anonymity, that's fine. And in the course of the conversation, it was kind of an interview. It was about 20 minutes long. He asked me, so, you know, basically, why is it that you're a compulsive eater? Why is it that, you know, why do you do that? And I kind of said, well, because, you know, life's difficult. And he was like, well, how? How is life difficult? Like, you know, and I think he was, this is just my interpretation. I think he was expecting me to say, like, you know, my family had been killed in a car accident, or, you know, drugs and alcohol. Or, I mean, and certainly I have my share of difficulties in my life, trust me. However, it was funny because he kept asking me, well, like, what's the big deal? Like, what's so hard about life? What is it that makes you act this way? And it really struck me that, you know what, just life. Life is hard. And so sometimes accepting life on life's terms isn't just when something bad happens. Sometimes it's just life. I was listening to, we were doing one of our meetings recently, we were doing a reading from the 12 and 12, and page 38 of the 12 and 12, which is dealing with step 3, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. There's the following quote on the bottom of page 38, and they were talking about the spiritual principle of relying on God, dependence upon God. And it says, when World War II broke out, this spiritual principle had its first major test. AAs entered the services and were scattered all over the world. Would they be able to take discipline, stand up under fire, and endure the monotony and misery of war? Would the kind of dependence they had learned in AA carry them through? Well, it did. They had even fewer alcoholic lapses or emotional binges than AAs safe at home did. And what really struck me about that is how true that is in my life, that when I am faced with the difficulties that life gives me, whether it's physical or financial or relationships, that usually I get through pretty well. I hunker down and I do the right thing. But what I have found is afterwards, like months, maybe even a year afterwards, I start to go, okay, hold on a minute here. I just lived through hell, and this is as good as it gets? I mean, like, who's going to cut me some slack here? And so I start to get resentful, and I have found that resentment often turns into, well, I deserve something good, so I need to eat such and such. And so it's a bigger battle after the battle, so to speak, than it is when I'm faced with some kind of trauma. When I face trauma, I actually handle it pretty well. It's afterwards. And that's, again, life on life's terms, is how do I handle that? So I ask myself that question. So, okay, Roberta, whether you're in a battle right then or the aftermath of it, how do you deal with that? And it really comes down to, for me, the acceptance reading on page 417 of the Big Book, which says, an acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism is what it says in the big book, but I'll translate that to until I could accept my compulsive eating, I could not stay sober or abstinent. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. And so that really draws me to, well, what are the things I can change and what are the things I cannot? I cannot change how I feel. I cannot change what other people think or say or do. I just can't. But I can change my behavior. I can change my behavior. And one of the things that my behavior has been changed by is CHOW. CHOW gives us 7 tools. There's the food plan, there's literature and writing, there's practicing anonymity, there's the telephone calls. I have to make 3 outreach calls every day to somebody in program. There are meetings. I have to go to 3 meetings a week. I have to do service, and I have to be involved in sponsorship. I have to have a sponsor, and I have to be a sponsor. And so in living life on life's terms, the action that I need to take that impacts my behavior is I work those 7 tools every day. So in regards to sponsorship, I do my best to be honest with my sponsor to say, this is really what's going on. Either I'm being bad or other people are being bad and I don't like it, but I'm just being honest. And I also get the opportunity to pass that along to my sponsees, that when my sponsees call me and they have difficulties, what I try to do is pass along what I've been given, which is the knowledge that there is a higher power, and it's not me, and it's not them. And any desire that I have to fix them, or any desire that they have to fix the situation, I accept that. I accept that, but I pass along that really, for me, my view of this world is, this is God's world, not mine. I am just his servant. I'm not in control. I cannot take the blame. I cannot take the credit. I need to do my job and leave the rest up to him. And so that's what I try to do. I try to pass that along to my sponsees. And this is one of the tools that in all this leads me to God, because living life on life's terms ultimately gives me a serenity and peace. But it lets me get the burden off my shoulders to go, listen, God, this is your world. If it's going to hell in a handbasket, it's your world. You're going to have to fix it. Gee, God, how are you going to get us out of this one? As opposed to, Roberta, you have to do this and this to make it better. Because I can't make it better. Who am I? This program has taught me to keep my ego in check. Ego is edging God out. And so I try to pass that along to both my sponsor as I share about my difficulties and my sponsees. The next tool is service. When I do service, I get distracted from whatever difficulty I'm faced with, and therefore it's a blessing. If I'm not doing something, then I'm just meditating on the difficult thing I'm faced with in my life. Worry is another word for negative meditation, where I just think about it over and over again. Look at, what about this and what about that and what if they die and what if I have this disease and what if? And I personally, I don't want to fight anymore. I have in my life fought against the eating disorder and fought against the food and fought against whatever else. And I've gotten to a point where my life is unmanageable and I don't want to fight anymore. And that's how I got to surrender. And so the surrender of, all right, whatever's the worst that could happen, it could happen. And you know what? God will still be God. And, I won't be here very long anyway. I only live for maybe, 80 years on this earth, Lord willing. I'm happy. I think when, this is just really crazy, but it's me. I think when I die, my very first words are likely to be, oh, am I done yet? Am I done? Because it's just really hard. But service does distract me from all that crazy thinking. So I'm like, oh, I can help somebody, like today. I have the opportunity to serve and share my viewpoint. People can take what they like and leave the rest. But service is a distraction and gets me out of myself. Service is freedom from bondage of self. Meetings. Certainly meetings. When I go to meetings, I hear what others have to say. And I am reminded that even though my life is difficult, it is not as difficult as others around me, people that I love. I have several friends around me at the moment that literally are going through incredibly difficult things, and I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for my problems, and I don't have an answer for their problems, other than to pray, "Dear God, place your will in our lives and give us the power and courage to carry it out." I certainly do not know what is God's will for me or for somebody else in terms of, oh, somebody's sick. Dear God, you have to heal them to make them better. God might do that, but he may not. But the bottom line is, I don't have to know the answer. All I have to do is pray and go to meetings and love people. Just love people and allow myself to be loved. All of that draws me to God, which is ultimately where I find my comfort. On telephone calls, the outreach calls, because I have learned that when I'm sharing how I'm feeling, again, like that interviewer I mentioned, he kind of was like, well, you know, what are you worrying about? People would love to have your problems. You should be grateful. You don't have anything to be anxious about. Well, that may be true, but I'm still anxious, and I still have a right to my feelings, and so do others. So on outreach calls, thanks so much, Judy. On outreach calls, because I know how much I don't like it, seriously, when I share my difficulties, I can't, 80% of the time, people will tell me how to fix it. Well, gee, you should do this and this and this to fix it. I hate that. I hate it. I hate being told what to do, and I typically will do the opposite. I may have shared this with you in the past, that there have been times where I'll come home, and I'll have something in the trunk of my car, and I'll think, oh, I want to come back and remember to get that, so I'm going to leave the trunk open while I go in the house and do whatever. And my husband will sometimes come along and say, Roberta, you left the trunk open. And I know he's saying that because he wants me to close the trunk. But I don't want to close the trunk because I have a reason it's open. It's to remind me of something. So I say, thank you. And he'll say, well, do you want me to close it? And I will say, no. And he will say, well, but you're going to run out the light in the trunk. And I say, yes. Because it gets to a point where if he's going to push me to do what he wants, I can't help it. I do the opposite. I just am wicked. So I don't want to do that to other people. When other people call, I got an outreach call and they say, man, I'm faced with difficulties. I don't want to tell them what to do. I can't manage my own life, let alone somebody else's life. So I try to just share with them and say, thank you for sharing, and I love you, and I'll pray for you. And when I pray, I don't pray, dear God, let XYZ happen. I really do try to pray, dear God, place your will in our lives and give us the power and courage to carry it out. Anonymity. Anonymity is something I try to practice. I have to admit, anonymity isn't something that comes up often in regards to me living life on life's terms, but it does give me something to do. Again, back to the concept of being distracted, doing service, and it is a service to do anonymity. Certainly, in general, I have absolutely screwed that up on several occasions and learned, don't do that. So it's not something that comes up every day, but it's important, and I do want to practice it. One of the best tools has been literature and writing. For me, when I'm faced with difficulties, to write about it. What is it that I'm thinking and feeling? Why do I do what I do? Why do I feel the way that I feel? How do I feel about other people? What do I think about God? Where is God in all this? Where am I in relation? So I ask myself these questions, and certainly the questions that we do as part of our program, that helps me uncover what's going on with me, and that helps bring me to a point of acceptance. I have to say that self-knowledge, me knowing what's going on inside me, doesn't necessarily take it away. If I'm faced with a difficult situation and I'm finding it coming out in my eating, where I'm eating abstinently, but I'm eating more than, let's say, that I have in the past, because, again, our food plan is flexible. There's different, you can have, again, 4 ounces of this or 2 pieces of this. And so there's a variety I can do, and those differences have different masses. So I can certainly choose, even though I'm abstinent, to eat more than I have in the past. And trust me, I have, because food is my go-to solution. And all of this, so I have to write about it. So I write about it, and I write about it, and I write about it, and I tell my sponsor and share. And even though I know all that, I still end up doing it. And so I just get to the point of acceptance. All of it drives me to God, which is really what I'm looking for, is to say, God, I can't handle this. I can't be faced with this. I don't know what the answer is, but you're big enough. Your shoulders are big enough. And the last tool I'll bring up is, again, the food plan. And, again, it's a challenge. but it forces me to come back to God. If I didn't have this eating disorder and my life was unmanageable, I would not have a clue that I needed God as much as I do. And that's really the answer to living life on life's terms. Life is difficult, but there is a higher power that's not me that's taking care of it. And I don't know what the outcome is, but I can trust my higher power. So, again, when life brings difficulties, either of my own making or somebody else's making, or sometimes stuff just happens, I go back to acceptance. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it's because I find, thanks so much, some person, place, thing, or situation unacceptable, and I will find no serenity until I accept things exactly the way that God designed. So that's ultimately how I try to live life on life's terms. I let go and I let God. And the first three steps, I can't, God can, I think I'll let him. And so what is it that I do? I try to work the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 7 tools in all my affairs. My name is Roberta, and my number in California is 714-299-9721. Again, 714-299-9721. And so grateful for everybody being here, and especially Cheryl and Judy. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thank you. I just want to backtrack a little and see if we can get Jan to give her number. Jan, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Jan. Can we please have your number?
Sure. I'm Jan D. in Arizona, and my number is 928-279-6021. It's 928-279-6021 Pacific Time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jan. And also Suzanne. Suzanne, are you still on the line?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Cheryl. I'm Suzanne, and I live in Los Angeles, and my phone number is 310-208-4311, 310-208-4311. Thank you.
And that's Pacific Time. Thank you. And we have another wonderful speaker, and that's Marcia D. Marcia, are you on the line?
I am, and thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Judy, for timing, and thank you for the other speakers. Wow, I have never spoke at a workshop before, and this is amazing, and I've gotten so many new ideas and tools from the other sharers and other speakers. I've been writing notes. This is Marcia D. I live in Seattle, Washington. It's Pacific Time. I've been in the rooms of Hal for the last 19 years. I came in 1996. I weighed 382 pounds within the first 2.5 years. I lost 200 pounds, and then I had surgery to remove skin. I am also a diabetic, and it was adversely affecting my health, and so I had surgery, and I had skin removed from my stomach where it had hung down very low. And I had what was called a pendulectomy, or what you would probably call a ribbon cut or an apron cut, but that weighed 18 pounds. I am going to share on one of the categories was grief, tragedy, and illness. And my illness is what my daughter would say, Mama, you have a mental illness, and that is that I am bipolar. I am a manic depressant. Was I always? I don't know. I can remember way back, and I think it was tied in with my menstrual cycle, way back as a child, you know, 11, I started my cycle when I was 11, but I remember just talking and getting so wound up and being disruptive in school, staying up all hours of day and night, not sleeping. And that usually, I would have a few days of that, and usually was the manic stuff was usually the week before my cycle, the week of my cycle, or the week after my cycle. And that went on for years and years and years and years and years and years. And but when I started losing the weight, I noticed that it was more pronounced. And I had more and more energy as I was losing the weight than I had had. I had weighed over 300 pounds for the last 15 years, around 350, 360 before I got into recovery. I got in recovery. I came into the rooms of OA 45 years ago and worked the food plan, which is our first 30 days. Then I went kind of in and out and in and out, and then they didn't have a food plan, and I finally came back, and somebody told me about HAL, and that was 19 years ago, and I've been working a HAL program ever since. But the bipolar tendencies really started when I started losing the weight, and I went to see, trying to figure out, and what I found out was that hormones are stored in fat, and as you lose weight, that it can cause you to have all kinds of fluctuations in your hormones and in your behavior. Well, it just kept getting worse and worse. Then I decided after I lost all the weight that I would go back to college and I would become an LPN and then go on and become an RN. I had been doing nurse's aide and home health aide and registered, you know, aide, worked with people on oncology floors and all kinds of stuff over the years, and I had this brilliant idea that I would go back to school at the age of 48. What had happened was when you're in college, you know, you're pretty much, you know, you'll stay up till 2 o'clock to study, you know, you get up at 5 o'clock, so pretty soon I was like, you know, going to bed at 2, getting up at 5, and I would do that. Well, lack of sleep is what pushes me into a mania. And I've never been, it runs in the family. My sister, my father, and I, we basically, our cycle of sleep is probably between, I would say, 5 and 6 hours. I don't sleep. I'm not one of those people who can sleep 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours in a row. I usually wake up and then my mind is going. And probably I've just been wired that way my whole life, that my mind just runs on about 20 tracks. I actually asked my doctor, you know, last year, I'm pretty sure I have attention deficit. And she said, yes, probably, but we're just going to do the bipolar. We're just going to work on the bipolar, because what I found out was that the medicine that you would take for, you know, adult attention deficit is very counteractive, with the bipolar medication. So I would have to go either off one or to start one or whatever. I wanted them to address that for a really long time because I can't stay on task, and it's very difficult for me to stay on task. My mind is going, I'll think of something and I'm off running there. I get in one room, I'm off running there, and I'll start cleaning in one room and then go off to another room, and my house would be immaculate because I can't go to bed at night unless my house is clean. So sometimes that's, you know, in my regular sleeping cycle used to be mostly, I would say, 10, I get up at 10 and I go to bed at 2 a.m. And that's my sleep. I try to get 8 hours, but a lot of times I just get really distracted. I retired 12 years ago, basically because my body just couldn't take it anymore. I ended up finding out that I had 5 herniated discs from doing all that nursing. I have 2 in my lumbar, 2 in my thoracic, 1 in my neck. I had done nursing for 35 years, and so I retired 12 years ago. When it really started manifesting itself was when I went to college, and it wasn't it wasn't so bad when I was doing all the prerequisite. I would, you know, I carry like a 3.25 to a 3.75, you know, 3.7 grade point average. And then I, when I got into the nursing program, the LPN program, one thing that happens when I don't sleep is I become totally manic with my conversation. And I have to say there's several people on the phone that have been mentors to me, that are really good friends. And there are people, there are so many people in the program that I have met that are bipolar, or been diagnosed with bipolar, or chronic fatigue, or even my prior sponsor, Katie, who passed away. She had, you know, she had Lyme's disease and chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, so she really understood me really well. Many friends who are bipolar are struggling with depression, struggling with some chronic illness that affects their mind and their ability to function or stay on task. So we've kind of like banded together. But there are people in the program who love me so much and know me so well that they've even coined a phrase, you're either winding up, Marcia, or you're spiraling down. And so I've given that term to myself. You know, I don't recognize it as fast as my sponsor or people that I work with or people, you know, my outreach calls. I'm a compulsive over-talker, and years ago, somebody said we should start a program for Compulsive Talkers Anonymous, and then somebody pointed out to me, and we were talking about it in a group one day, and said, well, you know, we would never get anywhere. We would never have any structure because we would always be interrupting, and that we'd never solve anything, so we all laughed about that. But I'm a service junkie, too, and when I'm in a mania, it's, you know, I jump up and I'm into everything. Oh, I'll do this, I'll do that. And then right afterwards, I'll be resentful towards them and angry with myself that once again I've not really, you know, looked at what, you know, what I could do and what I couldn't do. Could I fit it in? And would get frustrated. So that, going back when I got, when it manifested itself, I remember, this is a funny story, but it really was the crux of it. One of the things was I had told my women's clinic that I thought I was in menopause, and she says, no, you're too young. At the time, I was 48 years old, but I'd started my period when I was 11. And I said, I know I'm in menopause, and, you know, and at that time, when I lost all the weight, I had gone back on the birth control pill. And thought that maybe I would like to have a baby, you know, crazy thinking at 48, or 45 actually, when I had a grown daughter, who is another thing. My daughter is autistic. I'm kind of caught between two people, which is my mother, who's 84, who's now had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's in a nursing home, and a daughter who is autistic and is on the spectrum, and she's got what's called a pervasive disorder, which means she has a tendency toward autism. She has OCD, compulsive obsessive behavior, and she has a little bit of a schizophrenic, and she's bipolar. So she's a challenge. And she's now 32 years old. She lives in an adult family home. She's very, very smart, but really lacks maturity. She would love to have her own apartment. But she's not gone to the place where that's a doable thing for her. So when I talk to people, I say that my daughter's has Alzheimer's and my mother's autistic, and then I'm like, people look at me and I'm like, oh, no, it's backwards. So I have that extra stress in my life. At one time I was leading, like, co-leader for 5 meetings, and there was a nice stay absent no matter what. You know, there's that saying, you know, stay absent no matter what, even if you're, you know, your butt is falling off, if it falls off, pick it up, take it to the car and take it to a meeting. So, yes, I stay abstinent no matter what, because even if, you know, everything is chaos in my life, and this was the topic that I had asked for. My suggestion was, you know, how do you work your program when you're not emotionally sober, you know, living life on life's terms, but how do you work your program when, you know, everything is in chaos, when, how do you stay abstinent, work your program, and stay emotionally sober when your life is in chaos? And so we changed the title to Living Life on Life's Terms. Yes, I do. I live life on life's terms. I do the next indicated thing. I stay obstinate no matter what. You know, living life on life's terms, you know, and planning something else, you know, when something else, you know, just life happens. How does it manifest itself in my life today? Okay. It's very hard. I wake up in a depressed mood. I usually drag myself down the hall. Used to give my food at night to my sponsor. I drag myself down the hall and look at what I had, you know, committed. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I don't want to eat this food. You know, I start preparing it. You know, pretty soon sponsees are calling, or I'm getting outreach calls, or I'm doing service. How has it affected me? Well, I don't get any sleep. Then I push myself into mania. I can't think straight. I get really easily confused. I hate myself. This has been the biggest struggle of condemnation against myself, and that is I don't understand myself. I don't even know, you know, I just hate this behavior. I hate being depressed. When I'm manic, I stay home because I frustrate people. I'm talking so fast and they can't understand what I'm saying, or I have a cycle now that they've coined that is aggravated mania. So everything gets on my nerves, and what normally would not bother me just aggravates me, and I lose kind of my inhibitions. I'm not cruel. I don't swear. I'm not obnoxious, but I have no problem telling you what I think. And
1 minute left.
Five minutes, you said?
1 minute.
Oh, I didn't hear your 5 minutes. How does it affect those around me? Some of them distance themselves. My own sister says, I can't talk to you when you're in a mania. And I love you enough to tell you that because all I want to do is yell at you and be mad at you when you're talking so fast and you're jumping all over the place and I don't know where you're thinking and where you're going. I have people in the program who tell me the same thing. They'll know instantly and they'll say, Marcia, I only have a few minutes. I can't talk to you. Some of them will say, I have more time and I'd love to talk to you. I like to problem solve and I get on the phone with them, but a lot of times I keep them longer than, and they have a hard time telling me. I'm a big girl, and if they want to say, you know what, we're not going to solve this problem right now, I really have to go. I honor that. I respect that. A lot of times I don't talk to anybody for, you know, about when I'm in a mania because I know how it affects others. But I consider myself a 24/7 sponsor in case of emergency, so I pick up. Sometimes it's not in my best interest, and I'm glad for texting because, and a lot of times I edit to my texting because it's going off and I have to bring it back. That's my mind that goes off. Has it affected my sponsees? Yes, in the past it has affected some of my sponsees. Today I have more sponsees than I normally would have. I have four, and three of them, well, actually all four of them, I just come off of a mania and just coming off of the depression part of it. And I just warn them, you know, that you haven't seen me yet. This is the cycle. I feel bad for them and those that have been with me long term. It has affected them. And they've moved on to other sponsors. And I'm fine with that. I can be a challenge. My last two sponsors, my current sponsor, she knows how to reel me in when I'm all frustrated about a problem because now I've moved to the next level. I do service at the intergroup level, and I get up in my head about a problem thinking that I need to solve it, and she's really good about saying, okay, what does the policy manual say? What are the principles of the program? And brings me back. And, you know, I also love this the acceptance paragraph. I love that whole book.
1 minute.
1 minute. Thank you. Thank you for the privilege of telling, you know, about my chronic illness. Does it keep me from doing service? No. I have to be careful about how much service. I'm actually stepping down on my lead to two whole lead two meetings, and I've stepped down from those two meetings, and I'm kind of stepping away from doing service at the meeting level and just concentrating on the service that I'm doing at the intergroup level. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for all my wonderful friends who have been there for me and know me really well. And thank God for CHEL, and thank you for all the tools. I can't say how, never can say how grateful I am. I do work many of the principles and have many things like restraint of tongue and pen that if I'm upset about something, it has to do with me. I do a lot of writing. I work a 10-step. And I work on fear, anger, and resentment shapes when I remember. I'm in Seattle, Washington, and you can reach me at 206-372-7856. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you all very much. I'm going to turn off the recording, and we will then open up for question and answer sessions. But first of all, I'd like to thank our wonderful panelists, Jan D., Joe, Judy G., Suzanne, Roberta, and Marcia, and special thanks to our spiritual timekeeper, Judy W. Let me just turn off the recording.